You know what happened? A thing happened this week. A sign appeared on the door. Lil and I, we live in an apartment, right? You know that, but some people, mm-hmm. some people,
I do know that, but yeah. Some people don't know that.
And a sign appeared on our on the door of the apartment downstairs. So there's we live at the top floor of a purpose built, you know, old style, 1960s. 60s?
Apartment block, yeah.
Earlier.
Yeah, I guess it looks like 60s to me. Maybe 50s, 60s.
And there's a car park out the back. And the sign says, this car park is closed tomorrow. And they get the date wrong. For work on large tree that has been identified as a priority. And I love this because it's not clear what the priority is. It's not clear whether the tree is a priority or that the work is a priority. Please park. Please park, find alternative parking. It's really a fantastic sign. And it deservedly is in the show notes. But then that day, the local, I guess you call them arborists, tree surgeons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Lots of trucks and the sound of a chainsaw.
Oh.
And this magnificent tree, don't ask me what type, magnificent tree which went way above the level of our apartment, so top floor of four levels, so a huge tree. Have you ever watched an arborist do their work?
I have.
It's compelling.
When you're dealing with a big tree.
And what was also compelling was, of course, we didn't know what the priority was. And so we thought, oh, maybe there's a few branches that have got weakened. And then, of course, there's this magnificent aspect of it, which of course the roping system that the arborist is using the tree itself. So he, in this case, is using the tree in itself to sustain its own destruction, really. But it got me thinking, because we felt that tree, especially I think during lockdown, that tree has been, always really the changing of the seasons, but also just a massive kind of collection of birds spend their time in this tree. It made me start thinking about two things. First of all, the tree sort of hackneyed idea of a seed and of a tree being itself and only itself for as long as it does. And I started thinking about two things, two simple words in the English language, potential and ambition.
Oh, my God.
And I started thinking about what an ambitious tree could possibly look like. And, of course, the word doesn't work, does it? It doesn't make any sense.
No.
But potential does. And I don't have anything more to say other than when I say those words, what comes to mind?
This is a podcast in which two friends have serious conversations about silly things and silly conversations about serious things.
I'm Simon Ellis.
And I'm Lee Miller.
Welcome to Midlifing.
I started to write a text message to you this morning saying, do you have a topic to discuss? Because if not, I'd really like to talk about ambition.
No, you're kidding.
Not even kidding.
Wow, 2021, rocking the world.
And I wanted to talk about ambition because not of a tree. I know it's 2021, but let's cast our mind back to late December 2020 when the Strictly Come Dancing grand final was on the television.
So do you think all our listeners, pretty much everyone will know what Strictly Come Dancing is?
Well, if they're listening not in the UK, then you might know it as Dancing with the Stars. But I think pretty much it's one of the most, isn't it, one of the most globally syndicated shows? I think there's one in most territories. There's definitely various versions across mainland Europe. There's definitely
one in Australia.
Version. Yeah, there is one in the United States. I think they're pretty... familiar
So Strictly Come Dancing, the final was last night.
Strictly Come Dancing, yeah. And there were four finalists. But there were four
Marty,
finalists.
Marty.
Where we're going, we don't need roads. a guy called Harvey, H-R-V-Y, because
of course
vowels are so last century. He's a YouTube phenomena and singing sensation. He was one of them. There's a guy called Jamie Lang who is famous for having been on a reality TV show and is kind of the heir to a biscuit fortune and is everything that you might expect from somebody who is
an heir to a biscuit fortune.
Biscuit fortune, yeah.
I didn't think that we would ever use the sentence heir to a biscuit fortune on this podcast. So
there's Bill Bailey, the comedian, and a woman called Maisie Smith. So she's the only woman, and she's 19 years old, youngest finalist to be in the Strictly Come Dancing canon thus far. And there was a moment where she was being interviewed, and she stumbled over the word ambition. And there was this kind of a micro expression of sort of like, oh, fuck,
going across her face. I can't own that.
Yeah. And I just found it. And this is a young woman who's as you might expect, experienced a fair bit of unpleasant backlash on social media because she's too cocky, she's too confident.
Oh, you mean because of being on the show?
While being on the show, all of right. these sorts of things. Whereas, in all honesty, there's no evidence of that. She seems like an ebullient 19-year-old young woman who's trying her damnedest to get good at something that she already has a natural capacity for.
Mm. What's her? Why is she a celebrity?
She's an actor. She's been on
the
TV soap opera. No, she hasn't. She predates she post dates the Bill.
Hey, the
she's
Bill doesn't exist anymore, does it?
No, and she's only 19. From the age of 6, she's been a regular cast member on EastEnders.
Oh, right. Okay.
The BBC soap opera.
Yeah.
And yeah, so there's been like lots of stuff, and it was just seeing her.
Wriggle's
a beautiful word. Wriggle in the face of the idea of ambition. And Bob and I were talking about it and thinking about the idea of what is it about not being able to own ambition? What is it about phrases like don't get ideas above your station? What is it about not wanting people to do well if they have either a natural propensity towards something or have developed a skill set through hard work or a combination of both usually. Why are we so bothered? And particularly when it's gendered, but I don't think it's just gender. I think it's also class and probably racially motivated. I think there's all sorts of things that allow certain people. And, you know, we've got at the moment accusations of cronyism within the Conservative Party, and that idea that contracts have been given to friends of ministers who have no experience in doing things. I mean, isn't there a guy who was given a major PPE contract, and his experience was selling paper fucking cups beforehand? And you kind of go, yeah, because paper cups are just like N95 facial masks. So yeah.
Actually been wearing one over my chin and nose. I have 5 on my face at the moment. It's very difficult to get close to this microphone.
Totally not the same routine as the tree.
No, but also I'm also slightly wanting to talk about serendipity as well, which, I mean, I guess it's not so surprising that two middle-aged people might want to talk about ambition, because it's certainly it's a time in your life when I love that we use that term, we use the word naked with ambition. That any sense, although I didn't know you, you know, I only knew you from, you know, we were both in our 30s, I guess, when we met each other, but when any trace of oh dear, I don't know if I want to admit this, but any trace of real sort of ambitious drive is dissipating or has dissipated. Do you think do you think of yourself as an ambitious person, or have you ever been?
I think fear has interrupted my ambition so many times. I think I have held myself back from trying things, and everything I've achieved. I have achieved almost accidentally, but obviously with a pinch of ambition attached to it as well. But I wanted to be an actor. That was what I wanted to do. And I did it for a little while. I think I've said before that I did it for a couple of years. And I think I worked with companies that were so, I'm going to say so mid-scale, but they were so bottom rung. I mean, like really, really not great. That it sort of, it sanded off any joy that I could find in the process. Mm. So the thing that I thought I was ambitious for disappeared in my early 20s.
Yeah.
And then I sort of basically followed what Bob wanted to do, which Bob always wanted to get a PhD. So I just started to do the same things that she did because I didn't have a plan. And then I think I got ambitious within particular jobs that I wanted to succeed in particular roles.
So your ambition grew in the context of a job?
Yeah. I think in the sense that I wanted to do the best version of something that I could do. But then the more I got, the more senior I became, the more I was seeing mediocrity being rewarded.
Nothing like that to curb ambition, right?
You know, there's that idea that cream rises. Yeah, articulate.
Yes.
The thing is, though, there's a shadow side to the idea of cream rising, and that's that shit floats. And I think I've seen some evidence of cream rising, but I think I've seen more evidence of shit floating. You know, so I don't know where I sit with ambition, because I think the moments where I feel ambitious, I wonder if it is this me being ambitious? Is this me wanting to do something? Or is this me thinking that other people will expect that this is what I should do at this point in my life?
Oh, right. Oh, that's strange. That's very strange. I want to read something to you. I did some, this is my background for the conversation.
I love that you research when you're going to do this.
Well, I don't, but in this case, I just felt a little bit poorly equipped to have the conversation. But some person called Aristotle,
never heard of him.
He talked about three kinds: healthy ambition, unhealthy ambition, and lack of ambition. And healthy ambition can be understood as the measured striving for achievement or distinction. And unhealthy ambition is the immoderate or disordered striving for such. And that he describes, this is in politics, that men's ambition, let's not talk about women's ambition, of course, and
because
avarice.
Because women don't have a social life, so we don't need to worry about these things. Right, thank you, Aristotle. There's no problem at all with using Greek philosophy as a yardstick. No.
That men's ambition and avarice are among the most frequent causes of deliberate acts of injustice. And I'm interested in that idea of healthy and unhealthy ambition. And it sounds to me like what you're talking about there is, or how would you distinguish between ambition and wanting to do a good job?
I'm not sure that I can really articulate a distinction. Once again, we have those moments where we butt up against the sort of a lack in language, and that ambition means a particular thing, and then it carries with it a sense of naked ambition as a kind of an inbuilt critique to the idea of being ambitious. And I
yes,
still
everyone can see it. It's totally transparent.
Exactly. And I think back to Maisie Smith, so talking about ambition fleetingly and course correcting the sentence so that she didn't appear to be too grasping. And I'm not sure if it is always...
Yeah, it's just not nuanced enough.
No, it's not. I don't think it is nuanced enough, because I think there are moments in a day where you probably want something for you. But then there are probably, in that same day, moments where you want something for other people.
Ah, yeah, you're making me think about motivation, really, and that categorization of motivation as being intrinsic or extrinsic, and that we can be internal or self motivation is far more powerful when it's intrinsic. That when we're offered extrinsic rewards for doing a particular thing, it doesn't nearly have the same long-term kind of... We're not able to maintain motivation based on extrinsic rewards. That intrinsic motivation, that is internal desire to do something, is far more powerful. I guess it's making me that thing about ambition being... I'm going to use the unhealthy... I'm going to prefix it with unhealthy or naked, that there's something about the being seenness of it, meaning part of the ambition lies in being recognized not as ambitious but as successful.
Yeah,
that it's a massive driver in to want to be seen to be this or that, it's so interesting because I wonder, you know, part of this conversation in the back of my mind is because I have a feeling that I have a feeling that others see me as an ambitious person.
Why do you think that might be the case?
Well, I do remember when I was at dance school. I remember I was in the changing rooms and I overheard my peers talking about me.
Oh, Simon.
Not well. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where you want the conversation to stop and you want it to continue because it's so revealing in a particular way. And one of them saying, well, we don't have to worry about that because Simon's going to do precisely what Simon wants for his own good. And there was a point at which I had heard enough and went out and I said, you have no idea what I think about things. You have no concept of what it is and why it is that I do the things that I do. Please do not, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
I did remember thinking, wow. I mean, and I'm still thinking, I guess, because that's the story that came to mind, was what would you be prepared to, or what would one be prepared to do in order to be successful at a particular thing?
That idea of you stepping out, which is incredibly gutsy, stepping out and saying, you've no idea. You've no idea of my interior landscape. It's something that we've touched on time and time again, and that's the distinction between intention and reception. That distinction between what we intend the world to receive of us and what the world actually gets. And we have this habit of judging people by the thing that we get from them and judging ourselves by, I've said this before, judging ourselves by our intention and judging other people by their actions. And that's why there's always this mismatch where, and understandably, that's why we're the heroes of our own stories, because we know what the true story is. But of course, that's not true either, is it? Because we tell ourselves all kinds of lies to get through the day. And we tell ourselves all kind of lies in relationship to success.
And we make sense of cognitive dissonance by telling all sorts of... Yeah.
And it kind of takes me back to the tree. It takes me back to the question that you asked, which was... Because there was one word that we've ignored in this conversation so far, which is potential. That idea of potential as something which... Do we see our own potential or do we require other people to see it in us? We have potential, but do we require somebody to, you know, to support us and go, this is something that I think you could lean into? Is that where ambition starts, where somebody tells you you're good at something, so you're going to you push towards that? Or I'm just flapping my lips at this point. I have no idea.
Well, I guess I'm just thinking, you know, I'm not trying to dwell on midlife. I'm really not, because it's not really the point of these conversations. But at the same time, you know, I remember myself to have been, let's say, riddled with potential as a young person. And, you know, and physical skills or whatever. And I think I certainly was ambitious. As a, you know, as a teenager, very driven and wanting to be a professional tennis player, and that I would do anything in order to make that happen. And also, you know, have just a memory came to mind of basically pleading with a guy I was playing against to let me win. Pleading with my opponent. I mean, I would have been very young, but still, you know, and it was getting dark and just this utter just painful desire for this to happen, and you know, just losing it, like really, like acting out and fully. I've just, what it must have been like to witness that, you know, this 12-year-old or 13-year-old.
Oh yeah, but I mean, we're back in that messy hinterland, aren't we? We're back in that place where we're trying to work out who we are, and it's that nakedness of ambition, but actually that nakedness of being unformed, that sense that we haven't learned how to clothe ourselves, we haven't learned how to cover up the bits that we don't want people to see.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a really brave person who can just put all of that out and go, yeah, this is who I am, this is how I, this is me.
Yeah, this is what I want.
Boom. have, yeah, this is what I want, this is who I am, this is how
this
I
this is what I'm prepared to do. Yeah.
Yeah. And whilst I say it's brave, it's also, I would struggle to imagine how I would build a relationship with that person.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, athletes are, it's just diabolical. You only have to watch a documentary about an athlete. It's just like, oh, God, please. Or a press conference with an athlete.
Or their parents. That's another thing that I find weird, where the ambition is intergenerational, where the ambition is passed through the body of a parent into the body of a child, and you will be. I can see how that might be wonderful, because I'd had parents who didn't have any ambition for me. And I don't mean that in a negative way at all.
No.
I had
they let
parents.
You be you.
Yeah, but also they didn't have the resources or the skill sets to know how to support me because they left school at 14.
Yeah.
It's
just a totally different world, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, you know, they didn't know how to support me to be an actor. And they, you know, all they knew was that was a really, really precarious job. You know, the idea of somebody being ambitious for me and being able to push me is so alien. So when you were 12 and you were losing it because you just wanted to win, how much of that was innate and how much of that was supported by a familial narrative of you will or you can?
I never got any of that from my parents. I mean, my mother was a pretty damn good ballet dancer, and my father was a mighty good rugby player. He was a pretty good athlete.
Yeah.
And so he had, I think he, yeah, they both did had a, I think he was, it was probably a little clearer for him. Maybe that, you know, the sort of sense of what training was and also what drive and motivation. And I'm using those words instead of ambition. That's really interesting. I'm circling around the word. And I think I don't think I got this from either of my parents, which is I never felt their desire for me to become a tennis player, for example. And I think this conversation for me is, I think I find that less interesting. I find it less interesting than quite a strong feeling these days of, this is how things are. I don't have to want to do that. I don't have to be that. I'm not still waiting for my big break as a professional dancer. And there's a kind of warmth and measuredness and pleasure in the softness of that experience that I find compelling and powerful.
Yeah.
It's like letting go of something. And I'm not talking about letting go, I've, you know, finally let go of wanting to be a professional that ship well and truly sailed, you know. Yeah, it's really...
Letting go is hard, though, isn't it?
It is. There's no question.
I think you're right about that idea of there being a gentle diminishing of ambition. But I'm not sure if it's about ambition in the sense that I want to achieve things dropping away, and more about recognizing that what I want to achieve largely is to satisfy somebody else's needs, not mine. And my ability to meet those targets are always going to be constantly moved ever so slightly beyond my grasp. So I will always feel slightly like I'm lacking and slightly like I should be doing a little bit more.
It's so interesting because it sounds to me like you're saying that your needs shifted or became clearer or reduced, or how do you... It's like, this is what is important.
I think a lot of this, in the Christmas episodes, we talked about miscarriages, and so there's an element of this, and this is not about ambition, I don't think, and I don't think it's about, it might be about potential, but it's certainly about finding yourself in a moment where you are not the person that you thought you were going to be.
Mm.
So Bob and I had spent... seven years. Just doing the maths now. Yeah, okay. 9 years. 9 years at various levels of intensity, pursuing the idea of becoming parents, from having sex to which is usually quite
which
a,
is an
a
excellent
strategy.
Beginning. Yes,
it's a really great place to start.
I'm a little nervous about joking about it though at this point.
No, I think we can joke about this a bit through to multiple miscarriages, through to IVF. We can joke about IVF. We can joke about my half of that. Probably not Bob's half of that.
Yeah.
Through to exploring adoption as a possibility, and so this is like a 9-year stretch, and then coming out the other side of it. If you ever really ever come out the other side of it, like it's a journey or like it's a tunnel, but coming to a point where you go, we've exhausted all the options that we are prepared to explore.
Yeah.
And then saying, who am I now on the other side of this? And it's not a surprise to me that I left my job within a year and a half of being able to avowedly say, we will not be having children in our home. We do not need to build an empire for them to inherit. We are just two people. And how do we want to live on the planet? And I wanted to make decisions that were a bit more, I guess, in keeping with who we'd become.
Yeah. That is fascinating. As you were talking, I think this is kind of related, but I can't quite see how. And maybe you'll do some editing magic to make it really related. And that is, just swinging back to potential and ambition. And I think one of the most extraordinary things about teachers is, I think, that profound awareness. And there's that terrible saying, those that can't do, teach.
Oh, yeah.
And there's just something, that incredible awareness of teachers, that your ambition might be to support the potential of others and to experience pleasure and joy as a consequence of seeing the potential of others realized, even in some small way, or even that potential being averted or diverted or changed and the kind of responsibility and power and beauty of that juggling between personal ambition and drive and the potential and the ambitions of others, and somehow navigating those two things or those two perspectives, I find compelling, and I'm always in awe when I bump into teachers who are clearly aware of that, the complexity of that role.